Good morning, everybody. This morning, I am going to talk a little bit about the Oxherding pictures, which appear in kind of traditional form here and in abstract expressionistic form on the 10 panels behind us. I increasingly think of these not as progressive stages, not only as progressive stages, but also as kind of a spiral. We come around again and again. We kind of move through each of these iterations in all kinds of different ways, and each time is somewhat different, and each time is essentially the same. And in the same way that life and death in the Zen view arises in each moment, and in each moment we are reborn, so too with moving through these stages. And just as within the space of a single period of Zazen, we can transmigrate through the six realms, the heaven realms, the hell realms, the animal realms, so too with these. And I do want to invite people to sit comfortably if you should so desire. So the first stage, the first Oxherding picture, is the beginning of the search. This is the place where we first become aware of our spiritual questions. The spiritual questions may take various forms. Perhaps, how can I be free from suffering? Who am I? Why does it hurt so much to be me? Or where does evil come from? Or what is my true nature? We may be motivated here by fear of death, or for some of us, fear of life. This is the stage, the arising of these questions is the stage of raising the mind of enlightenment. And I really invite you all to reflect on what is your question. Doesn't have to be one of those ones, but what is it? What is it that pulls you? What is it that you're trying to clarify? What is it? Where is the place that you see suffering? Dukkha. Awareness of this dukkha is the beginning of the path. And so then that search brings us to the second stage, seeing the footprints, seeing the tracks, seeing the traces. Here we embark in earnest on the path. We discover the tools of Dharma exploration. We discover meditation, though we may not understand it. For all of us, I think, there is, when we first come to this practice, there is a glimmer of rightness about it, something that fundamentally makes sense, a dimly perceived potential of coming home. And so, just as in the first picture, really important to clarify for yourself the essence of the question. Also here, important to clarify for yourself this thing that you actually do see even now. The next picture is glimpsing the ox. And at this point here, we see for ourselves, we verify for ourselves that the Buddhas and ancestors and our own teachers have not been deceiving us. We see the essence of it. We see that all of the Dharma texts we've encountered are actually related to this thing. We glimpse the great matter. and we only ever glimpse the great matter through a small opening, a small intimation of what it is. And this small opening, this small intimation in the koans that we read, where it says that the monk had some experience and then experienced a great awakening or a great satori, that is just an alternative phrasing of small intimation. This small intimation, this small opening, perhaps comes with fireworks, and then in our delusion, we think we've seen the whole ox, but all we've seen is a part. All we've seen is perhaps just the head. All we've seen is a tiny part. But this tiny tail, what a wonderful thing it is. So having glimpsed the ox in the fourth picture, we grab the ox, we catch the ox. We've got our lasso and our whip. We've got our shepherd's crook or whatever it is we have. And here in this picture, we see the ox fighting mightily, resisting mightily. And having become oriented to the nature of the spiritual work to be done, here, now, we must begin to truly do it. And we are conditioned by kalpas, by aeons of karmic habit. And the work can be painful and slow. We see just how much of a mess our minds are, and how quickly and inevitably we respond from grasping and aversion. And while in this stage, perhaps we imagine we see no change at all, this is a period of excruciation and great effort, the work of lifetimes. Then, in the fifth stage, taming the ox, and here we still have, we're still using the tools of the Dharma, the bridle, the rope, the whip, but we're able to lead the ox. Here, at last, we begin to see that patterns can change, habits can be unlearned, and compassion and wisdom truly can be realized and practiced, this one thing realized and practiced. We still rely on the tools and support of the three treasures, the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha, because we truly can't do it by ourselves. And nobody else can do it for us. In diligent application, patience and generosity toward ourselves and others is the moment-to-moment practice. In the sixth stage, riding home, here we see the ox herder sitting astride the ox, playing the flute. Here we can begin to loosen our grips on our minds, on our stories of how we or the world are or should be, and even on the tools of the Dharma. We can hold even our Dharma practice more loosely. We can play freely in the fields of samadhi. We play freely on the iron flute with no holes. riding the ox, playing the flute, entrusting ourselves to the universe, we receive all that comes, and we release all that goes. Natural flowing. In the seventh stage, which on this, in our version here, we see the ox has disappeared, just the ox herder, just the world. This is called transcending the other. And so, having returned home, here we actually can rest. This is the place where we have relieved the most acute of our own suffering. We've lost the ox. We've found the ox. Who even can remember what that search was for? Original face? As soon as it is mentioned, the arrow sinks in stone. And yet, in this very place, where fundamentally nothing is acquired, we really do acquire it. That's the seventh stage. In the eighth stage, we have the Enso, the Zen circle, the form of emptiness. And here this is called transcending self and other. Seven was transcending other. This is transcending self and other. Here, in this one bright pearl of a universe, there is not even a single thing. No self, no true nature, no wisdom, no delusion, no seeking, no finding. No seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching, and of utmost importance, no knowing. There's also no Dharma here, and even emptiness is itself empty. Then in the ninth picture, shows just the world. This is called returning. This is called the source. So, in the eighth picture, there's no Dharma, no knowing, and even emptiness is empty. And yet, though form is indeed exactly emptiness, form is also form. The one bright pearl manifests as the myriad things, as the entire universe. From the beginning, nothing has ever been hidden. Nothing has ever been missing. Nothing has ever been lost. Just this has always been it. Time after time, there is nothing but this. The universe of emptiness arises thus. Then, in the tenth picture, this is returning to the marketplace, sometimes called returning to the marketplace with bliss-bestowing hands. And here we see that the ox herder has become older, thicker, and is meeting a young person who looks a lot like the ox herder at the beginning. Here we dive back into the great fertilizing muddle of life and death. We partake and participate. gratitude arises and we see that our debt to the Buddhas and ancestors and to our own teachers can never be paid back. But we vow together with all beings to pay it forward ceaselessly. This is the Bodhisattva life, Bodhisattva practice. So, and I also imagine that the old fat guy here at the end meeting this young kid is saying to him, "Hey kid, have you found the ox?" And then the kid's like, "Oh, the ox, oh, what is my true nature? I don't know." And then he sets off on the path. Thank you, everyone. I want to invite you to, again, sit comfortably and come forth into Dharma dialogue. Where do you find yourself? What? Where do you connect? What do you resonate with?
So, listening to you today and stealing looks at the certain pictures, the thing that came up for me today was how comforting it is to me that the ox herder is just this little guy. And he's not like, you know, he's not like Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Right.
You know, he's not The Rock. Yeah. And he's not going to just take that ox by the horns and wrestle him to the ground. But, you know, there's no way that you can, that he can do it through strength, willpower. There's compassionate teaching for me.
Yeah. So have you looked online at Mark Morse's presentation of the? Because he draws him like that.
At the beginning, I think you mentioned that it's like how we can go through all of the realms of existence in one sitting period. And so with this ox herding pictures, sometimes I find myself in the beginning all over again and again. So it looks like it's a progression, but is there maybe no difference in the experience of each of the pictures? Each of the pictures is expressing and awakening to the Dharma. There's no difference in the awakening. Yeah. What does all that mean?
Which stage is that?
No, I want to know what it all means.
Your question is exactly the point. Well expressed. So here we have arising. What does it all mean? And also arising, and yet what could it mean? It actually is only this, only ever this. Right? Both of those arising. And part of our practice is, part of the dynamic of practice is like a cord stretched taut between two telephone poles, the poles are whatever is propelling us, and also the fact that from the beginning nothing was missing, and then this line stretched taut between. This is our practice. Both are true. Both are true. And part of what Zen practice is enlarging our heart's capacity to hold these two conflicting truths simultaneously, without making one the real truth and one fake, without subjugating one to the other, without collapsing them into just one thing, or without preferring this one over that one. We hold open our heart to this. And we sit down right in the center of nothing missing, nothing different. And, you know, in a way, I feel like maybe I forgot to read one sentence or say one sentence. In the second stage, where he's pushing aside the weeds and grasses, at this stage when we're doing that, we're wondering, how might we express our true nature? If we were to really express our true nature, what might it look like then? Huh? Wow.
So I think this is a very important point that you're making, Carol, about how we keep falling into these places, particularly the beginning, right? We can feel like we're stuck here yet again, right? Wasn't all this practice and vision of these other stages worth something, right? Why do I keep falling back into this place of difficulty and suffering? And shouldn't there at least be a little, idea in my mind that, I've seen this before, and this really, this too shall pass. But I keep marveling at how convincing it is, when I'm stuck in it, right? That here, when I get stuck in these hell realms, they're just utterly convincing, and there's not a shred of an idea that this time is any different than other times that I've fallen into this place. Yet, I also find that I have more willingness to just be in that place, and that is the really important thing for me, is that not needing to be elsewhere and just being intimate with being stuck in hell when I'm stuck in hell, and that it's fine. We have this idea that we should be able to attain a thing that is going to liberate us from this suffering somehow, and that now that I'm an accomplished Zen practitioner and I've been doing this for years, I no longer should be subject to this falling into hell somehow. I should know better than that. I've seen the answer to this, right? It's all empty, or whatever answer you want to choose, right? I know I've seen this, right? Why do I keep getting stuck? But our life is going through. This is life. We get stuck. We get unstuck. Sometimes we see. Sometimes we don't see. And what a wonderful life it is to go through this. This is it, right? Continuing to make progress on this path, even though we don't seem to be going anywhere. What if we aren't going? What if it isn't a spiral? It's just a circle, And we're just going around and around this circle. This is the circle of life, right? Pain and suffering and joy and meeting and parting and coming and going and thriving and declining. This is life over and over again. How wonderful.
The part of different panels stand out to me the most. The wrestling with the ox is the one I know. A lot. But I love the progression from 8 through 10. So much of the time I think the story should stop with 8. You just get to the numbness and you're right. Just bliss, and there we hang out. And Or maybe even nine. It's a nice natural photo when the world is just showing up. But I particularly like 10 because it's so much, even a Buddhist writer says, you're kind of the worst place you could end up is the marketplace. I mean, of all the unholy areas, you know, hey, that's it. The last one is you end up exactly in that spot.
Right.
That seems to be the, you know, where you really wouldn't have thought you were headed on this path.
Right. Yeah. And that is the very essence of the Mahayana path. I encourage some of those of you who are perhaps more reticent to speak to dive in, to take up the practice of generously opening your mouth and getting it wrong in the service of all beings.
Yeah. Okay, wrong. So when I have seen this in the past, I usually imagine it as a progression. There's, you know, years spent up there and kind of years wrestling with four, and then you kind of start moving through and 20 years pass and you're kind of more here, and then you kind of stay there sort of more or less. But the way I'm hearing it being described, and tell me if I'm interpreting it kind of right, is that even as you kind of move, and maybe there are years there, but then there's sort of a moving into here all the time, but there's still a kind of a coming back to having to work with that karma or whatever.
Yeah.
And that, you know, and there's not just sort of here and then like you're Ramana Maharshi or you're like Shunryo Suzuki and it's just...
Right.
That's it, you know. Like, and if maybe you are there and you think that, maybe that could be an issue.
For sure. Yeah.
So there's wisdom constantly, you know, like seeming like Dogen's just sometimes it just seems like so much work, like, you know, just keep practicing. It sounds like, but
yeah, really well summed up. I agree. And my advice to everyone is if you find a teacher who presents him or herself as only ever in the 10th stage or only ever in the 8th stage, run. And also, what good is that? Because, I mean, even if there are those saints who do that, what about us? And what about the marketplace? What about everyone else? So this is of utmost importance. Even as teachers, it is precisely our familiarity with the first stage, with the fourth stage, with the pain and the struggle and the doubt and the questioning. This is the thing that enables us to teach. This is of utmost importance. And there's kind of like a trend line, although there amid this circle or this spiral. So it starts out like 1, 1, 1, 2, 1, 1, 2, 2, 1, 1, 2, 3, 1. Thank you.
I mean, I can really identify with the struggle part, number four, where it's just in one, you know, sitting period, it's like, you know, stupid mind, why don't you settle down, you know? And it's like you often say, you know, just because your mind's not settled down doesn't mean that's bad zazen, and just because your mind is settled down doesn't mean it's good zazen. That's just what's manifesting right
that's
now.
That's right. That's right.
And learning to sit with that.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And when we sit down and see that our mind is a super huge mess of grasping, aversion, and certainty, right? That is actually the fourth stage. That's not the zeroth stage. Like, how wonderful. How wonderful. This has been going on for kalpas, but now you see it. What an amazing development.
I was thinking, looking at the first two, is the for me, sort of the I don't even know what an ox is, and I'm trusting that, you know,
right,
that people aren't BSing me on this, and I'm trying to figure out what one looks like. But I also,
right,
you know, even if I saw it, someone was like, oh, there it is. But I also, as people are tired, realize, you know, I think I also sort of want to be like, well, you know what, I don't want to go looking for the ox, and but I can't not go looking for the ox, because I'm an ox herder. That's what an ox herder does.
Yeah.
And so I it would not, you know, so even in my practice, if I'm like, forget it, it's like, well, no, you can't forget it. You're a human being.
Yeah. And so this is related to something that I often say, which is that the point of no return is actually very, very early.
and in that way, it struck me that as I'm like, okay, well, I'll go, you know, whatever reality, I'll go do what you tell me. And I'm in the second picture, and I'm just like so like looking, searching, and thinking. And I may come to the realization like, oh, that's it. Or I may be so deeply involved in that, I'm actually an eight, but I don't know that I'm an eight. And so therefore I am an eight. So it's a... I'm done.
Yeah, yeah. pertaining to the... So you don't know what an ox is, but even now you have personally seen those footprints.
Mm-hmm.
So I have no idea what an ox is, but I'm pretty confident there's something. And also regarding not knowing what the ox is, as Dogen says in Only Buddha and Buddha, when you realize the Buddha Dharma, you do not think, this is realization just as I expected. And even if you think so, reality invariably differs from your expectation. So even if you do know what an ox is,
mm-hmm,
oh yeah, an ox. So that's gonna be, it's gonna be a big black thing with horns, and it's gonna be, you know, it's gonna, maybe it'll have a ring in its nose, and I'll definitely know an ox when I see it. Yeah.
Right.
It's still gonna be different.
Yeah, yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Abraham.
I think I'm having a similar trouble where I'm having issues putting myself somewhere on the map, because I've spent a long time being pretty convinced that I was like, I just totally had the ox, but then every time I look back in retrospect, I totally did not have the ox. So now I think like I must not really be anywhere near it at this point, even if I feel like I am.
I gave a talk on the ox herding pictures on Tuesday night too, and somebody said to me, so wait a minute, is the ox mind, delusion, or enlightenment? Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And so seeing you don't have the ox, how wonderful. And looking, okay, what is, okay, yeah, I definitely, okay, I have it. And so that is all included. And it doesn't necessarily have to arise as a cognition, as a content of consciousness. Sometimes it's just continuing to show up to practice. That is following the traces. You know what you're looking for. You don't know what you're looking for. You're sure you had it before. But continuing to show up to practice, continuing to come to meditation on some kind of basis, continuing to hear Dharma talks, read Dharma books, go for Dzogchen. So that is fully it. But the place where we get into trouble is if we say, okay, I've got the ox, I'm all set, I don't need anything else. And then we're off with our, you know, imaginary ox, which turns out it's actually a dung beetle, and we're saying, I've got the ox. Seeing, okay, I didn't have the ox. I would locate that on there. I think that's some version of the first three.
So I would just say it's important to note that none of these is closer or further away than any of the others, right? So we do have these different positions that we talk about, you know. So there's 10 different Dharma positions that we're laying out as a thing to discuss, right? And there is this searching and finding and all these different things, right? But each of them is already it. There's no place we can go that we're closer or further away, right? It's actually this thing that we're experiencing right now is 100% it, right? And we just, I think what Harry said about this realizing that we're ox herders, you know, and that this is the thing that we do, and it's not really about how it feels to us. When we do it, sometimes it feels good, like oh, you know, I see the ox for the first time. Isn't this wonderful? And other times it's, I'm sure I saw the ox, and now I have no clue. You know, I just can't find it. And all of this is included, and all of it is exactly this this life of an ox herder. Sometimes we see, sometimes we don't see, and never closer or further.
I was recognizing that when I first got involved in the Dharma and some particular meditation, I think my goal was to get as much space between myself and the first state possible, and then to like stay there. Distance. And my comment, and it's just because you invited red some people that I'm saying it at all, is that my path right now is staying sometimes in the first stage.
Yeah.
And actually I haven't spent much of my life there at all. I've been spending much of my life avoiding that in different paths. Strategies for it. So meditation was just one kind that I did.
Right.
And the weird thing is my heart, well, this is not weird, but my heart is so broken about everything. About Kathmandu, about Freddie Gray, about anywhere I go. I mean, I went to India for a while and there's poverty everywhere. I didn't know what to do. It was so obvious. I mean, there's poverty here too. And, so I think that's my Dharma gate.
Yeah.
I thought it was the thing to jump out of.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right.
Right.
So well expressed. Mm-hmm. And thank you for coming forth with that. Yeah. And so there's a way that we can use the eighth stage as a place to hide. there's nothing. This can be whatever lovely states are attainable in meditation. And the thing is that they're attainable sometimes, for some duration. And that seems pretty far. And then the practice of really, really being present to the heartbreakingness of the world. This is actually, as Steve was saying, really it. This is included too. Thank you. Thank you, everyone.